How much time did you spend in the office today writing? Really think about that. Emails, blog posts, releases, specs, project outlines, notes. The average worker spends almost half of their time writing and reading content in work. That's a massive investment that doesn't get nearly the coverage that many other business trends do. And in today's episode, I'm excited to be joined by Textio's co-founder and CEO, Kieran Snyder. We're going to talk a bit more about her background in linguistics and math and how that drew her to a career that spanned Amazon, Microsoft, and founding Textio 5 years ago. This episode is based on a quote she had around writing is the currency of business, and we're going to dig into all of that and more after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the 21st Century HR Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and I am very excited to be joined today by the founder and CEO of Textio, Kieran Snyder. We are going to be talking about the role of language in business, as well as Kieran's background and kind of what led her to Textio. So Kieran, thanks so much for coming on the show. If you wouldn't mind, just give the listeners a bit of an overview and an intro on your background, please.
Absolutely. So I'm really excited to be here today. I am the CEO and co-founder of Textio, which is an augmented writing platform that really generates the language that gets a response for things that you're writing at work. And prior to Textio, it's been kind of a long road. I started out linguistics and math double major before that was a common combination. So it gives you some clue about my age. And then I went on to get a PhD in natural language processing and spent the first decade of my tech career really mostly working in search and natural language processing at Microsoft and Amazon. I'm excited to be here today.
Cool. So I want to kind of start at the beginning for you. What initially drew you to that kind of an educational background? So the interest in kind of linguistics and mathematics, where did that come from?
It goes back a really long way for me, back probably into my childhood. So my dad is an engineer. He is still running his very small company. He's turning 80 this year. So he started it when he was 40. So I have seen the whole journey, pretty much. They make radar systems for spacecraft. It's very different, but I grew up seeing him as an engineer. And then my mother was a writer. And so in a very real way, I grew up to be an engineer and a writer. And I discovered linguistics when I went to college as a field that kind of let me take everything I had ever liked about math and computer science and language and kind of rolled it all up together in the same field.
Yeah, and so when you were pursuing that education and that degree, what did you envision you'd be doing? How did you think that would translate to a post-academic life when you were starting your career?
It's a funny question. I don't know if I thought I would have a post-academic life. I think my intention when I went to college was to become a linguistics professor. And in fact, that was my intention until 6 months before I finished my PhD. I thought I would do something in linguistics and cognitive science. So I don't know that I thought I was going to have a post-academic life. I thought it would just become more and more of an academic life.
A deeper and deeper academic path. Well, you deviated from that path. You went kind of over to the corporate side and began your career, as you mentioned, in roles at Microsoft and Amazon. I mean, how did your education, your linguistics and mathematics background translate to your early roles there?
So when I finished my PhD, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I didn't know what was next because I had planned forever to be an academic. And as I was drawing to the close and I was getting academic job offers, all I knew was that I didn't want them. And so I wasn't sure what I would do instead. And I spent a year writing because that's what I knew how to do. And then I got to the end of that year and I ran out of money. And my friend who worked at Microsoft at the time said, hey, you should come work here. You have this computational linguistics background. We're hiring people to build, you know, really invent the first ever framework for spelling and grammar checking in languages other than English. And I thought, no, I don't really want to do that. I don't like any of those people in the technology industry. I know them all because I've been coding since I was a little kid. And he said, okay, but you said you needed a job. And I said, that's true. And so long story short, he was right. And I love software. And it really kind of started me on a career. It drew from everything I had done before. My first job was in helping to create those frameworks to get sort of core language capabilities working in software in languages other than English. And ultimately, got very involved in search and search algorithm design. I got to lead search's integration into the Windows platform before I left Microsoft. And it really all went back to this foundation in linguistics and math.
Cool. So almost 5 years ago now, you left Amazon to start Textio. And I'm always curious about origin stories, right? And kind of where that idea came from. Where did the idea for Textio come from? What led you decide to leave Amazon and kind of go out with your co-founder and create something new?
Yeah. So to answer this, it's probably helpful to understand a little bit of Jensen Harris, my co-founder and CTO's background, which is pretty different from mine. He has always been deep in productivity user experience. You know, he led the first UI for email, which became Microsoft Outlook. And then from there led the design and implementation of the Office ribbon, you know, the sort of standard UI in Word, PowerPoint, Excel, and then led the first UI for Microsoft Surface. So whereas my whole career had been very deep in language and search and algorithm design and data, his has always been deep in building user experience, really three times for a billion people to use. And in the summer of 2014, we were talking about the history of writing software and sort of reflected that it's, you know, in the 4 or 5 decades since we've been writing on computers, there actually haven't been very many sea changes in the experience that we have. So, you know, the first thing is people like my mom went from using typewriters to using computers at all, right? Personal computers became popular and it was just sort of magical to be able to type on a screen and use backspace. You know, I remember my mom using whiteout when I was a child on typed pages. And so it was just magical to be able to have things be digital. And there was a, you know, product called WordPerfect that sort of invested big and kind of won that text mode market around word processing. And that really lasted until something else happened, which was graphical user interface came along. And Microsoft embraced this in Microsoft Word and recognized that it was no longer enough just to type on a screen. You wanted it to actually look good, you know, desktop publishing, boldface, italic, formatting. And that era really lasted for 15 or 20 years. They were, you know, pretty much dominant in the market until something else came along, which was the internet and cloud. And Google recognized this really before anybody else. They bought a company called Writely, which they turned into Google Docs, and recognized that, okay, it's fine for the document to look good, but actually what we want, Lars, is for you and I to be able to work together on something in real time. And we got to, you know, looking at this history, because we've both been working and writing software for really our entire career, and realizing that none of that software did the most important thing that writing software could really do, which is actually to make the words good, make the words work. Right. You know, and if you could take the advent of the various, you know, machine intelligence technologies that's really been on the rise and really where I've spent most of my career, what could you do if you had masses of data about the patterns that were working? What kind of writing experience could you create for people? And so that led to Textio. And the very first thing we built was a Kickstarter predictor, not something for HR. So ancient history.
Interesting. And so what made you kind of make the pivot then to HR? Like, what was that evolution?
Yeah. So we knew when we built our first prototype using Kickstarter projects that it wasn't the first product, right? Kickstarter was a really great place to prototype the technology because all of the outcomes for every project were known. And so we could kind of prove. And by the way, very depressing as a long-term product person, the quality of your idea has no relationship to whether you raise money on Kickstarter. but the verbs you use and the font mix you have, you know, these are highly predictive. So we knew that wasn't going to be a product. It was really just proving out the technology. But as that was all happening, I was publishing quite a bit in mainstream media about issues of bias and HR and documents about people, right? You know, did a big study on bias in performance reviews at technology companies or bias in the way men and women present themselves in resumes. And so because of that work, I was really getting to know leaders of talent and HR very well. And we realized that there was a big opportunity in what we were creating for these leaders. You know, they had a big problem, which is that they write a lot, spend a lot of energy recruiting. They are not super happy with the return on the investment that they get. They lose talent. They don't have diverse talent. They collect a lot of data about the problem, and we had a solution. So we could help them find the language that was going to change the way they hired and change their business. So that's really how we landed sort of the first application of Textio in recruiting.
Got it. And so the first application, was that more geared towards job descriptions? And what made you kind of zero in on that channel?
Yeah, the very first product we've offered, which we still offer, is Textio for job posts. So how do I write in such a way that the most qualified and diverse audience will reply? And we started there for a couple reasons. First, it is the foundation of what makes a company the company that it is. Who you hire changes the way your business performs. I don't know many leaders in modern business who wouldn't agree with that. And so if we had the ability up front to change with our words, who could see themselves working in our organization, we could change, you know, the way the organization performed. And it's not just true for recruiters, but for hiring managers across the organization too, who quickly, you know, started using Textio and considered other possible applications in other kinds of writing that they do at work.
And so, and since you've scaled to helping recruiters with their communications and their outreach, and you know, I still remember when I demoed Textio in the earlier days, the application around job descriptions was very clear. The evolution of it towards recruiter communications made a ton of sense because I think we're in this interesting place right now where it's never been easier to find talent on the recruiting side, but it's never been harder to kind of cut through the noise and get their attention. And if you're not able to craft a compelling message, you have next to no shot, especially for in-demand talent. So as you think about the roadmap for Textio, you know, as I first kind of started thinking about it, I could see it being applied to things like, you know, career site, language, even, you know, pulling data to help formulate employer value propositions. Like, do you have current plans on how you see kind of the use case and the capabilities evolving in other channels of recruiting?
Yeah, you stated really well why direct recruiter outreach was the step we took after job posts, right? Because when I write to you, if you're a qualified candidate, you're getting dozens or even hundreds of messages from recruiters every month. And we know that if, you know, I don't write to you in a way that speaks to you personally, you're not likely to apply. And as we've started playing this out across recruiting communication, one thing that emerges very clearly is that across all of it, a company's brand and values come through very clearly in a way that candidates respond to. So you talked about career site, but I'd invite you to think a little more broadly about all the places you're writing at work, right? Giving a simple example, eBay is a Textio customer. And when they talk about asking for somebody, you know, either in recruiting outreach, on their career site, in a job post, they're looking for someone with prior experience in a role, they see 52% more men apply than their baseline. But when instead they talk about looking for somebody with demonstrated ability, they see 42% more women apply. And those say very similar things, but they're not identical. And the way that it is expressed changes who applies to eBay. And if you go dive into eBay's corporate culture and company values, demonstrated ability, you know, show me what you've done, don't tell me what you've done, is far more endemic to how they think about their company culture. And so when they're communicating in a way that aligns with their company culture, they're changing who applies to the company. And so we see that across possible applications of writing.
Got it. And that actually makes a ton of sense. And I think looking at your most recent, what I believe is your most recent product release, which is Textio Flow, and the ability to bring in kind of augmented writing to help hiring managers and recruiters build job descriptions from scratch. What was the kind of evolutionary point towards that technology where you kind of moved from evaluating and making recommendations on language used to actually generating the language based on data points?
Yeah, so that's a great summary of kind of the key shift. So Textio, you know, Flow changes the way that language gets written. So really think back through all of that history of word processing, and it has one thing in common, which is as you're typing one letter, one word at a time. Maybe you have autocomplete that helps you with a word or two here and there, makes a guess. But really you as the writer are structuring everything. You're choosing every word, you're choosing every sentence. And when you're choosing, you're guessing, right? If I'm writing to you, I have to guess about what's going to resonate with you. And maybe I'm a good guesser, maybe I'm not, but I don't have a way of knowing that ahead of time. I have to wait for you to reply to figure it out. Textio Flow really changes the game. So it's no longer the case that I'm always writing and Textio is always editing. Now I can kind of drop my rough ideas onto my writing canvas and Textio and I work together to shape it much more proactively into the language that's going to resonate with the intended audience. So if I know I'm trying to reach engineers in San Francisco, Textio knows that there are ways of communicating with that group that are much more likely to resonate than if I'm writing to accountants in New York. So if I just sort of drop my rough requirements there, Textio can help me find the language much more quickly than I can guess it. But the whole conception of the feature is really to get individuals beyond guessing.
No, I like that. And I think it also, you know, helps address one of the challenges in recruiting, which is job descriptions are often just a retread from the last time you hired that person. And I don't think that companies in large invest enough time and thought behind crafting the job descriptions, which are really one of the most important kind of employer brand collateral pieces you have as an organization, because that's the piece that gets a ton of eyeballs, gets a ton of attention. And as you mentioned, helps determine who you're actually hiring into your organization, which is hugely important. I know that the release of Flow was recent, and so I don't know how much data you have behind that, but I'd be curious, do you have any kind of A-B testing data of Flow-created job descriptions and traditional, you know, kind of human-crafted job descriptions in terms of applications, hires, conversion, et cetera?
Yeah, so there's a lot to reply to in your question. so I'll try to unpack. A-B testing itself as a framework, probably important to contextualize, is a little bit old. So in the case of language, A-B testing is pretty hard because you first have to know what to test. If I'm writing a 500-word job description and I have in mind that I want to A-B test, my version against your version, A-B testing includes the notion that we're going to hold some things in common. And with language, it's pretty hard for us as writers to guess which words, which phrases, which structural elements we want to change. So part of the opportunity about building this on a much broader data set, you know, Textio's data set right now is more than 500 million with the B documents with outcomes, is that you can get out of ad hoc one-off testing where, you know, you're seeing so much data that you start seeing patterns repeat that you can find much more robust patterns pretty quickly. So I'll just kind of caveat there. Flow does have sort of three benefits, with that caveat that we measure. The first is around performance metrics. So Flow is designed to take the writer to, in the case of job posts, a job post that performs in the top 10% of the market. So if you're following Flow's experience all the way through, on average, your jobs will fill 2 weeks faster than their baseline. Okay, so that's pretty good already. But also, the job is much more aligned with your brand because the language that is getting suggested by Flow is drawn from that which performs really well at your company. And then kind of the third piece is just the speed to write. You know, these documents that typically take somewhere between 30 and 40 minutes to write, they're still your ideas, you're still at the center, but typically you're done in 4 or 5 minutes. So there's sort of, we measure gains on a number of dimensions.
And I'm curious, with that size of a data set, you know, you've been doing this for almost 5 years now within Textio, what's the biggest surprise you've encountered? Is there anything that really surprised you as you look at the data set and the outcomes that you've measured?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise, which we see over and over again, is that people are very bad guessers. I think my biggest surprise is actually less as the creator of Textio, the product, and more as a user of Textio myself, as somebody who writes with it, that routinely I discover places that things I would have sworn would resonate won't. And it never stops being a surprising experience, even though you learn over time to trust. You know, it's very similar. An analogy we use sometimes is the experience that I have driving with Waze or Google Maps, right? Waze sort of knows where the traffic accidents are ahead of me on the highway and can tell me, seriously, get off the highway here. Don't go to your usual exit. But when that happens, if I know that the exit, know for sure the exit it's taking me to, how could that possibly be faster? I've learned over time to trust the guidance, even if it seems unintuitive to me at first, because the software just has exposure to much more data and information. And I think people have a very analogous experience writing with Textio, you know, biases that you've held for a very long time. I know that works. I've sent it to 20 people and those were my best 20 people, right? It turns out that a lot of the guesses you hold are not actually correct.
Yeah, and one of the things when I read the press release for Flow, you had a quote in there that I'm actually going to borrow for the title of this podcast because it resonated with me at that level. But I'd love to go a bit deeper with you. You said, writing is the currency of business. And I'd love to just hear you kind of extrapolate that a bit more to get some of the thinking behind that.
Yeah. So if you think about any kind of business or any kind of company, whether the company is making software or making t-shirts or making widgets, right? The thing that they're probably actually making the most of every day is words. And we all spend a lot of time at work writing stuff down, whether that is website content, marketing content, job descriptions, emails to one another, communication to customers. You start making the list and it becomes mammoth very quickly. And at the end of the day, words are really the most expensive product that any company makes. It takes a lot of time. I think I saw a couple of weeks ago, I was reading a report that said that the average American sort of corporate worker is spending 20 hours a week just writing email. That's half of your full-time job, okay? Just reading and writing email. And that doesn't count all the other kinds of writing. And so it's expensive. And so when we think about language and words being the currency of modern business, it's really the recognition that all of those words have to amount to something. If I'm writing to you in a way that gets you to respond to me, to apply for a job, to buy something I'm selling, to make a decision, to sign up for something I'm really excited about, to convince you to come to my meeting, right? All of that changes the way my business really performs. And so it's hard to think of something more fundamental than the way that we communicate with each other and how our businesses perform.
Another thing I'd be kind of keen to get your thoughts on, I believe as of the time we're recording this podcast, you're actively looking for a chief people officer for your team. And as obviously the title of the podcast, 21st Century HR, might drive you towards, I think that there is this shift that is happening in the space. And as a progressive kind of CEO, co-founder of a very kind of forward-leaning organization, I'm keen to get your thoughts. What, when you find your ideal candidate, what will that background be? What do you think the ideal kind of experience and approach and skill set of a modern CPO should be today?
This is the million-dollar question, I think. This is a million-dollar question. We've thought about this a lot. You know, I think for us, the top most important thing is that thoughtful people leaders right now at Textio or anywhere else are probably not coming in and rolling out a cookie cutter HR playbook, right? I think those days are beyond us. You know, there are certainly some best practices and, you know, operational stuff that's probably you can learn, you know, from one company to another, but companies have different foundational cultures. They value different things. They communicate differently. And I think today's savvy chief people officers partner very closely with those leaders of brand and marketing and customer interaction to deeply understand the company's culture, what drives the company, and build the system around that. So when we think about our chief people officer, we're looking for somebody who is as willing to innovate in our people system as we have been with our product, because they go together. And I think that is a movement in the industry right now for people leaders to get way closer to the company's cultural aspirations and intentions and build a system that enables those.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I think it touches on really just how the profile has evolved. I think when you look historically at the field of HR, you know, risk averse as opposed to risk taking, traditional and predictive as opposed to creative tended to be how people viewed that role. And that's just a very different position now. And so interesting, I'm always keen to get CEO's perspectives on kind of what that ideal profile looks like. And obviously something front of mind for you as you're speaking to candidates and building your team. One last question for you, Karen, in terms of resources. So if there's anybody listening to this podcast is interested in becoming a better writer, what resources would you suggest, for them that may help them hone their skills and ultimately just become better writers?
It's funny. The year that I did nothing but write, I was the best writer I've ever been at the end of that year. The top most thing that makes you a better writer is writing and really putting in the time and the energy to try things. Once you have made that commitment that you're going to experiment, improve, put in the time that it takes, getting beyond your own guessing is the most important thing you can do to change the resonance you have with your readers. I'm obviously a big believer in software as an, you know, a tool to help you do that, because it can just, software can just see many more patterns than you can see. But even if you're not using software, there's nothing like the rewrite or the second opinion or the feedback to get you a little bit out of your own head. But the, you know, the topmost thing you can do to become a better writer is to write. And so for us, you know, the writer has always been at the center of what we're trying to create.
Yeah. And you mentioned software. Are there tools outside of Textio that you would recommend people check out?
None specifically. I think anything that's going to give you the second perspective on what you're saying is valuable. You know, I think the industry has gone so far beyond basic grammar checking, you know, avoid mistakes that embarrass you. Like, that's sort of table stakes right now. When I was first in, you know, inventing some of those pieces, those were like exciting and new. Those are fully commodity right now, right? So of course you should be using some basic proofing tools and grammar checking. That's behind us in the rearview mirror. But I think there are other products that aim to help with collaborative writing that are really interesting. I was a fan of Quip a couple of years ago and used it for a number of pieces that we do internally. You could look at something like Crystal Knows Me, which helps you understand the emotional impact your words are likely to have on people of different personalities. You know, but anything that's giving you that second perspective, bringing someone else's point of view closely into the experience, is likely to make you better.
Well, great. Well, Kieran, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your experience and your perspective with our listeners. So thanks so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.